Hey, welcome to the Apply Rigor podcast. I'm here with the guys, Dave and John, and
wait, you're one of the guys?
Well, typically yes.
Oh, okay.
But today, I'm the man. Thank you, everyone. Hey, we are now jumping into episode 4. The last couple episodes, we have been sharing our stories. Last week was Dave, and he did an amazing job of helping us understand how freaking hard it is to start something, especially an ad agency, when you've got people lined up ready to support you, and then when you hit go, they're gone.
They're gone.
And by the way, God bless you three that stuck with him. Well done. But today, we're going to talk to John Sierra, our co-host over here in this part of the room. And so, John, welcome to the hot seat, buddy.
Sure.
Exactly. We're ready to go. And so, you know, one of the things we really want to dive in today is to understand your story, understand where there were peaks, where there were valleys, and kind of really know kind of what you're bringing to the table today.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. Thanks for listening to my story. My major background is in music. Like, that's where my love has been seen, passion's been seen. It's where it comes out, is in the whole band aspect. And similar to what Dave shared last week, that became absolutely, I didn't know it at the time, was an identity piece for me. So growing up, there's some family dynamics of, some neglect. There was not a lot of engagement from my folks. So I began to kind of look for that in other areas, other people, attention. And one of those places was music. I found this underground community of people that that began to accept me. And even though I didn't fully fit in, they still kind of accepted me because I was a chameleon. I was in everything. And over time, I began playing guitar. I taught myself. I'm self-taught. I started at 12 years old. And I just would go learn other music. I'd look at guitar tabs, guys like Stevie Ray Vaughan, and start following. Okay, he's playing this. Can I get there? And you know what's crazy is when I was like 8 years old, I had this vision of me on stage playing an electric guitar solo, and that is what drove me daily. That's what drove me to practice. So throughout that piece, there was ups and downs. If any of you are familiar with the Enneagram, it's an awesome personality assessment. I'm a 4, which is the most emotional on the spectrum. And I didn't know that growing up.
Well, we knew that. That's why before we started, we took the box of Kleenex that was right here, and we put it off camera because the dude cries on every freaking episode. You
I
just can't
cried.
See it.
I almost cried.
Actually. Sorry, I digress. It's
you.
All right.
Thank you for that. So I'm a 4, not knowing that, 12, 13 years old, I'm even that young, dealing with already addiction, certain addictions in my life, depression. At that point, I wasn't. Eventually, that would get to the place where some suicidal tendencies and desires and thoughts, but I wasn't there yet. So I'm warring with that, and I begin to find this place in music. So, 15, 16 years old, I start a band with a friend of mine, and we begin to have some local success. 200-something people would come see us on a couple-month basis. We'd have a show, and places would just be packed. It was a Christian band called Trademark.
Nice.
In the early days. And I started writing the music. That's how I started. It just was him and I. He wrote the lyrics, I wrote the music. So that began to expand. I'm in school. I didn't really have to try. I didn't have a lot of push to try that hard in school. I just, I don't mean to sound arrogant. It's just how it was. I didn't have to study. I had a photographic memory. So I just look at it one time, take good notes, and I could excel at tests. And you're going to hear this in my story. There was never any sense of push hard. I didn't have that.
Mm.
There's a sense of entitlement for sure. Everything was handed to me. Nobody really drove me deeper. And that's going to come out in my story in just a couple minutes. So as I progressed through life, 18, 19, I began to work at a church. But this deep angst in me towards music because it was my identity. And I'm like, I'm not doing music. I have to do music. I ended up trying out for I auditioned for a competition and made it. And short story, ended up in New York City at 19 years old, signed to Shirley Grant Management, which is a talent manager. They started the Jonas Brothers. That's their claim to fame. And Hayden Panettiere started with them first. So it's a legit management company. I start there with really acting and modeling, and they wanted to make something of us out of music. In New York, the depression started to... Actually, even previously before that, my depression had hit really hard, 16, 17, 18, to the point of suicide, putting myself just in really unsafe situations. And that's going to get, I'll share more about that too. So in New York, depression, end up being there, start to push through, but again, don't believe I have what it takes, start to give up. My brother and I come back home. I want to take the easy way. And the easy way is, let me start a band with the original guy I went with. And that band was called Attalus. And so for about 20 to 25, that would be what would drive my life. That became my absolute identity. And the band started to make it. So that I started taking marketing. I set up, I ran it like as if I was the entrepreneur of this business. While I'm also freelancing graphically. That's what I was doing for work at the time as a graphic designer. The band started to gain some following. Again, 200-400 people. We opened for Switchfoot. We had some pretty big success. There's some other bands that are larger that we ended up opening for. Won contests, started to get some accolades. And at the same time, my life, I'm going to get emotional about this. My life started to shipwreck out of control, spiral, wow. Addiction. I was married at the time and basically destroyed that the first time. And ended up somehow, by God's grace, weaving me at a place of a counselor. And that was not my low point. I was still too arrogant to admit that I needed help. Even though I'm in a counseling office, I still don't know that I need help.
So let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Push pause real quick. So when you're going through, because this is part of the valley, right? Even though you said you're still going down the hill.
It's going down the hill, yeah.
Right? Does anybody know that you're struggling with this? Like, are there people around you that are like, John, you know, what's going on, man? Or were you able to really kind of mask the whole thing?
I masked a lot of it. So there were people who could see it. They kind of knew. Some people would hear my story. But again, there was nobody, let's put it this way. Nobody in my life said, you have a problem that you need to deal with. And I couldn't see it. All right, no, let me back up. I chose not to see it. It was denial. Some of it was, I had no sight to it. But some of it was self-denial of like, I can't stop because if I stop, I'll die.
Well, let me ask you this. What would they have had to say to you in that moment for you to come clean? Since you were so good at masking it, what would they have had to ask to break through?
Or the other question too could be, would you have not even seen it because you were masking so hard that you didn't want? You're so into yourself and that identity of the performance that you go, I just don't even care what you have to say. I'm doing this on my own.
I think it could have been, well, it's interesting. I would definitely say yes to your question until I met someone, which was my counselor.
Cool.
And for whatever reason, I respected him. He stepped in as like a dad, and I don't know why I kept going back, but he told me, you don't know what love is, the first time I met him, and I'm like, well, whatever, I'm just doing my thing, but I kept going back. It doesn't even make sense. So to answer your question, Dave, yes, I don't think I would have listened. I think there were men in my life that may have said things, and I just blew right past it. Like, wow. Just didn't even stop to think until I met, his name's Johnny Clark, till I met him, that started to unravel my heart.
There you go.
So this is where the valley starts to really bottom out. As I'm working through a lot of deep emotional, actually I didn't even work through it, I just start going deeper and deeper and deeper. I end up working for Dave Jones. We start working together.
Woo-hoo!
And in that process, addiction grows.
Was that the bottom of the valley?
That's clearly the bottom.
That's
right,
the moral bottom.
Yeah, nothing
I
couldn't left.
Do anything else. Yeah. I knew I was at the bottom when I had to work for him.
Yes.
Actually, I witnessed the bottom of that.
Yeah, yes, really? So that's coming. I had come out of some addiction recovery live-in facility, ended up working at MS Good on the backside of that, and I entered back into places of addiction while doing the whole band thing.
Wow.
While married, things are literally like the spiral is getting so fierce that I can't hold on to anything. I can't function. I'm not functioning. The company is suffering because of it. The music is suffering. When I go into the studio, I'm trying to play my parts. I'm so terrified of getting it wrong. I can't play the parts right. Wow. So it takes me three times as long to complete what should have been faster or what should have been done on time. I'm not practicing because I can't be by myself. I can't be alone. And basically what started to change that as I slunk deeper and deeper and deeper down was I got so deep that I tasted what I thought was going to be enough for me. And by God's grace, well, really, to open my eyes to that, it wasn't enough. And I think that was because of my counselor speaking truth into me. And there was some threats, etc. And like towards me, towards just having to deal with this piece of my story. And short version, my wife left and we were separated. And almost fired from work. I literally lost everything. Money went to zero, literally zero. I was actually negative because I had to go to ER. I had my first panic attack and didn't know what it was. I thought I was dying. And or to the urgent care. I show up at urgent care, find out it's a panic attack. My life began to spiral out of control into a severe anxiety. Not necessarily hopelessness, because I had one man in my life telling me, next step, and that was the counselor. Like, yeah, this is the next step. You need to face your story. You need to face reality. The band, because of my choices, I had to leave. At the same time, the band is being signed by a mid-level record label. They get a deal. That's been my dream. I destroyed it.
Wow.
From running. And that's the bottom. I remember walking in my house. It's 5:30 in the morning, and my house is a disaster because that's how I lived. Disgusting. Wife is gone. I'm totally alone. She's never coming back, and I know that. I have no money. I barely have a job, and that's when it started to hit me. Like, I can't live like this anymore. I need help. There's something absolutely wrong in my story. From that place, as I began to work through, I began to face reality and having courage to face reality because of the men and some other men in my life. There's another story with community. That's a whole other thing of people that had surrounded me and got me to this place where I could look through things. And slowly I started to face my past. And out of that, I began to go through and started to work better. I had mentors like Dave. Dave would kind of come in. Okay, you need to go to the next level. I started to be quiet, to be still, meditate, learn to sit in what I feared. So we talk about controlling emotions here. I learned how to sit in the emotion and let it hit me for the first time in my life.
Wow.
And go, it doesn't own me. We talk a lot about identity. My identity is not my emotion. I had to learn that I'm not music. I don't have to be a rock star. That there is something likable about John more than what he does.
That's right.
And out of that, slowly, and I'm still in the middle of it. It's a 5-year something process of, like, I began to develop confidence and belief that I am more than this, and that I can actually get through hard things.
Yeah.
I can press through. I can deal with heavy emotion, and it's not going to destroy me and break me apart. I can work hard at work. And I can enter into some places that are very uncomfortable to build something. And I can stay put. I don't have to run. I don't have to leave a job after 2 years. I can stay put and really build and work hard and work my butt off. Can't curse on this podcast. Yeah. But I can work my peep off.
Though he wants to.
I do.
So, you know, one of the things when I talk to different executives is, or even athletes in this kind of what we're talking about here, is you needed an awareness. Like a shock to your awareness. So one of the things in later podcasts, we'll talk about emotional intelligence. One of the things about being a high EI is that, or high emotional intelligence, is that you have an awareness to the fact of what you're doing. And what I hear you saying is you just weren't aware.
Yeah.
Or maybe you didn't care about the awareness. You're just going to do your own deal.
Yeah.
But once you became aware, when you came home and like, oh my gosh, my house is a mess. I have no money. My wife's gone. I am now aware that I've got to change.
Yes. Yes, and then out of that awareness, I get fired up about this, because out of that awareness, and again, it's a slow burn, it's hard, it's a literally, like you guys have all talked about, slow crawl.
Yo, yeah.
Out of the other side.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm still doing it. I began to find success in every area of my life after the awareness.
Yeah.
And the willingness to sit in the awareness, slowly I began to take thoughts captive, I began to work hard, vocal lessons, songwriting, like begin to enter into my give things the way that I should have been in the first place, and it's not my identity, it's something I love.
Yeah.
I don't have to do it, I get to do it.
Yeah.
And that's
thankful to get to do it.
Thankful, yes, there's a gratefulness in it. Yeah. Not always, but
yeah,
you know, someday.
See, it's so interesting because, I mean, when you put yourself, when you base your identity on a role, right, or even on a dream, you become a prisoner to that identity. Mm-hmm. But when you place your identity in something that is full of life, right, that I am enough, that God has made me who I am and he loves me and that's enough, that's where that freedom happens.
Yes, and I know we're winding down, and what I'd say to that is, absolutely, I learned that I am a son of God who is loved deeply, that I don't have to perform for my father's affection and attention. I still struggle daily with that idea of believing it, but I'm able to go, that's the truth. I don't have to make it, quote unquote, to be somebody. I already am. Therefore, I can work hard. Therefore, I can do something.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, as we land the plane here again, you know, what I would ask you is the same thing I asked Dave last week is, man, if you could look in that camera and you know there are people on the other side that are right, maybe right in that valley you were in where they come home and their home looks like their life, right? It's the picture where it's a complete disaster, man. What can you, what kind of hope, what kind of encouragement can you give those guys on the other side?
I would say, be willing to be still and to let whatever it is. A lot of times we get to that place because we're running. We're running from something. We're trying to prove something. There's pain. There's heartache. Get some close people around you first that can support you and then begin to be still and let it hit you. Grieve what you need to grieve. Be honest with what you didn't get. Be honest with what you want. Be honest with your deep hopes. And begin to look at what's actually there. Like Dave said, you have the awareness of what is actually happening in you and around you. Start there. And then through that, have hope that, okay, I don't have to stay here. Because basically what I'm telling you is, that's not the end for you, that's the beginning. That's the beginning of real life. In that place, there's going to be a death, but that death brings life. And that life is hope, and it is the bottom of the valley, but out of that valley, there will be a peak of life and hope and success and beauty and goodness, creativity, innovation, inspiration. All those flow when we start to be still and stop running. That's awesome. What I would say.
Awesome. Thanks, John. Hey, thank you guys for joining us today. You know, we love doing this with you. We love the community that's being made. You know, I want to encourage you to make sure that you subscribe to the podcast. Hit the subscribe button. These are free resources to add value to you. Know that, though, that we are in your corner, and I hope today filled you with hope in terms of the belief that change is possible. Check us out next week.
See ya.